97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon KFTK and Instagram at Mark Talk. You're listening to the Mark Reardon Show. In darkness,
with empty hands. New song from the Killers. Spinning this one because the Killers are here for Evolution Fest.
Ooh.
I guess they. I heard, and you know, I left on Wednesday. I was not here Thursday and Friday, but I guess Tom Morello was picked as the replacement for Jane's Addiction. Did you know that? You
I
know
did Tom not. Is? Who is that?
He's a rabidly left-wing rock star that is one of the best guitar players on the planet. But he is, wow, he's out there on the politics.
Mm,
there's
great.
No doubt about that.
Does he talk about it at shows? Or
oh,
do we
all? Absolutely.
Oh,
but he toured with, he went on the road with the E Street Band in Springsteen, and he kept his mouth shut on that. So he's capable. We'll have to see. But he's a big name, I guess you could say. So Evolution Festival this weekend. Tickets are still available. We have Jack Cardetti coming up at the bottom of the hour. They're calling this Winning for Missouri Education. Now, for those of us who have been in Missouri for a long time, and we remember when the lottery was sold to us as Winning for Education many years ago,
yep.
And then it wasn't quite the Win for Education. We will see how this goes, because, Sue, have you noticed some of the ads for the gambling amendment?
Oh, yeah.
Teachers saying, hey, this is all about
moms
school.
Moms and, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. Jen, the teacher with
yep.
the nose ring, was telling me that I needed to vote for it. Uh-huh. Now, I'm going to vote for it, but I'm a little suspicious on the education front. Cardetti, who is a longtime friend, personal friend and friend of the program, is working on this campaign. We'll grill him here at the bottom of the hour. Right now, our friend John Ziegler, co-host of the podcast The Death of Journalism. He calls it like he sees it. I can't wait to hear his take on the state of the race. Zig, how are you this afternoon?
I'm always good talking to you, Mark.
Well, let me start with the state of the race here as we sit 6 weeks out. Here's how I started my monologue here this afternoon. I see, you know, I was watching a lot of football over the weekend. I don't know about you. I see these Kamala Harris ads nonstop. They're slick. They're polished. If you don't know anything about her, if you don't know she's an idiot, she doesn't come off like an idiot. And then I see Trump on social media hawking minted coins yesterday, 6 weeks out from the election, Zig. I don't know if that's the best strategy right now.
You don't think that's a recipe for success, huh?
I don't. That's just me, but I'm not the expert.
Well, I don't think you need to be an expert to realize there's a problem. Look, I think we're seeing some very interesting things going on with the polling. As you know, I have a background in polling. I was a polling analyst at one time. I've commissioned several major polls that created quite a bit of media coverage. I've been following polling closely for about 40, 45 years. And right now we're seeing a huge disparity between the national polling, where Harris is on the borderline. If you look at the mainstream, you know, media-related polls, and I realize conservatives automatically discount those, which drives me crazy because Trumpsters thought those were great when Trump was beating Biden, right? And when Trump was beating DeSantis,
yes.
They were gospel.
I've tried to tell the audience this. You can't have it both ways, and a lot of people want to have it both ways, John.
Right. Well, that's the world we now live in. So right now, if you look at the mainstream polling nationally, Harris is on the verge of blowing this thing open. Like, this is a situation where Trump can't win. But if you look at the state polling, which is obviously theoretically more important because we have the Electoral College, the New York Times and Emerson, two obviously liberal outlets, although the New York Times has been very pro-Trump in their polling all year long. But those two polls came out today. And in the state-by-state battle, this thing is as close as it could possibly go.
That's right.
Trump is technically winning enough of the swing states in the New York Times poll, I think, to potentially win. Emerson, same deal. Now, that doesn't mean that's going to happen because all of these races are within the margin of error. But there's a huge disparity between national and state. And I have a theory that I've never heard anyone else put forward in polling, and so it could be just lunacy, or maybe I'm onto something, and we'll find out in a couple weeks. I have a theory that state polling tends to lag national polling when it comes to events like a debate or something like that in its impact. And I think it's possible, underlying possible, that we may see Harris start to take a little bit more of an advantage in the state polls. If that does not happen in the next couple of weeks, we are headed, gun to my head right now, we are headed for an election night where there are five or six swing states that are on a razor's edge, and that will determine the election, and it'll be days, if not weeks, before we know who actually won.
You know, I had a little bit of a discussion earlier with another contributor, my friend Brad Young, who's our legal analyst, about polling. And I tend to still kind of put a little bit of trust in polling. And I know a lot of people say, you know, there's nothing to it. But I'm curious in what you think, having followed it for so many years. I even mentioned, John, I started looking at Real Clear Politics back in 2000 when they were just a polling site, right? So I've tracked polling and I followed it quite a bit. I love what they do right now, where they do This Day in History and what it looked like in 2016 and 2020 and today. But your opinion and thoughts on whether or not people are avoiding these polls, because now you're getting a lot of text messages with polls. I've taken a couple, but are you getting to people who really are making decisions, or is that a little hard to do because of no landlines, etc.?
Look, technology has made polling more difficult, but there's also other ways to get data now that didn't exist in the past. But I want to address something you implied there that I see from a lot of Trumpsters, which is the idea that, well, Trump is way ahead of where he was in 2016 and way ahead of where he was at this moment in 2020. And he won in 2016 and he almost won in 2020. Therefore, logically, he's clearly going to win in 2024. I do not buy that theory at all for a number of reasons. Number one, knowing what I know about the incentive structure of the polling industry, I believe that there is a huge incentive for the polling industry to not get burned by Trump three cycles in a row. And I believe, if anything, it is more logical to conclude that they are overcompensating for the Trump vote currently than they are undercounting it, as they did in 2016 and in 2020. And by the way, you mentioned Real Clear Politics. To me, this goes to a large part to my view on polling and why I am very suspicious of so-called right-wing polls like Rasmussen and Insider Advantage. I know for a fact, because I've done the exact same thing you have done with regard to Real Clear Politics, I know for a fact that Real Clear Politics is censoring polls that do not look good for Trump. They are telling people that want to be posted at Real Clear Politics, if it's a bad poll for Trump, don't send it to us. That's a fact.
Well, hang on. How do you know that? Why would I know those guys? But why would Tom Bevin? Why would they do that?
Giving up a source, but I know it.
Okay.
And by the way, this is something I have suspected for a long time, because their averages never made any sense to me when I was looking at the general gist of the polling. The Real Clear Politics, for whatever reason, is a pro-Trump organization, and they do not want anything to do that with them, and they do not want to do anything with creating a narrative that Trump is way behind. So if they get a bad Trump poll, they tell the pollster, don't submit it to us.
I hope that that's not true, just because I know those guys.
It's 100% true, Mark.
But I don't think that they're... Wait, a couple things there. I don't think Real Clear is a pro-Trump site. Now,
I'm telling you what's happening, Mark, right, and I'm telling you the averages bear this out. The averages are always more pro-Trump than they should be, based upon the general gist of the polling. Always.
But what's the motivation for that?
Because they are pro-Trump. And they don't want to be associated with an anti-Trump narrative. I mean, plus the fact that everybody benefits from a race being seen as closer. We all know that in the news media. So, look, I don't run Real Clear Politics. I'm just telling you, I have direct evidence that they are telling telling their pollsters, don't submit the poll if you want us to keep taking you seriously if it's an anti-Trump poll. I mean, that doesn't get worse than that when it comes to aggregating polls. So I do not trust Real Clear Politics anymore.
Okay, well, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that one, just because I don't know about the insider.
So you
stuff.
Think I'm lying?
No.
So you think I'm lying to you? That's amazing.
Come on, Zeke. Okay. I don't think you're lying. I don't. That, to me, doesn't seem logical, only because I know Bevin and Carl Cannon. I know what they're about. And certainly the site itself presents itself as a bipartisan site in the very nature of what they post every day with opinion pieces. So I'm suspicious of that. I'm not calling you a liar. Come on, John. I've known you for a long time. But that doesn't make sense to me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Good luck with that.
All right. Well, you're in a crabby mood today. You know that. You sound like you have COVID, by the way. I'm just telling you. All right. So outside of all that, let me. This I think is up your alley, and I addressed it earlier on the show, and I love this because I mention Tim Russert all the time. Maybe I've mentioned his name to you over the years. So Bernie Goldberg, who I know pretty well, and Bernie used to be on the show quite a bit. He wrote this book, Bias, John, and you do a podcast on journalistic bias. Today in his newsletter, he talked about when he was writing his book called Arrogance, which was the follow-up to Bias. He sat down with Tim Russert and he interviewed Tim. And he, of course, Tim Russert died in 2008 of a heart attack. But he asked this question about fair journalism. And Tim Russert said, the key to fair journalism was always respecting another person's views and never suggesting that anyone had a monopoly on correctness. And that should be the centerpiece to being a journalist. You don't go out there bringing your profession and attitude. You know what's right for the country, or you know what view is the progressive one or the appropriate one to have, which, by the way, is the opposite of journalism today. And he said this, I'm all for having women in the newsroom and minorities in the newsroom. I'm all for it. But just as well, and this is the part that I loved, let's have people with military experience. Let's have people from all walks of life, people from top-tiered echelon schools, but also from junior colleges and the so-called middling schools. That's the rich pageantry of America. And he said, look, you need cultural diversity, ideological diversity in newsrooms. And that's exactly the opposite of what we have in the modern era of journalism, John.
I couldn't agree with that more. In fact, I mean, I think Tim Russert would be horrified by what he has seen in 2024. I mean, it was a bad problem in 2008. It's way worse today. I mean, now we have diversity for the sake of diversity. I mean, literally, I mean, just look at on television, and if it's a liberal network, it's like almost illegal to have more than two white people on the set at one time. I mean, that's almost a fact. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, unless one of them is gay or openly liberal, you're not allowed to do that. Because that's just the way they look at diversity. It's not cultural diversity. It's not ideological diversity. And certainly, you know, at the elite news organizations, there's absolutely no question that conservatives are no longer in a small minority. They're in such a tiny segment of the population that they're afraid for their own existence. And they're not even going to, even if they are conservative, they're going to hide it. They're like public school teachers here in California. You're not going to say you're a conservative because your career is going to be jeopardized.
Yeah, or
so at that point, it becomes a one-party state.
Yeah. By the way, but your state in California, you have been saved by your governor because I understand he's now banned all plastic bags at grocery stores. So that's got to make you feel a lot better about the future, doesn't it?
But not at fast food restaurants, oddly enough. I mean, the amount of plastic you get at McDonald's is just utterly ridiculous.
Isn't that interesting?
Of course, you can't even get the plastic at McDonald's because the minimum wage is so high, there's no one employed to give it to you.
By the way, one of the things that always annoyed me about California, and this spread a little bit out to the rest of the country, and you still have fancy restaurants to do this, but you guys have those stupid paper straws, don't you?
Oh, yeah. For the most part, you can still request a plastic straw, at least at McDonald's you can, but you got to request it.
But one of my favorite stories of the year, John, and this is more recent, and this kind of goes to the climate, you know, nonsense that goes on, especially even with banning plastic bags. The prediction that came out at the end of May, it was going to be the worst hurricane season ever in the Atlantic.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
Thank you for being on top of this.
Not only was it not the most active, it was the least active in history. So how is there any credibility with those guys, with the climate alarmists?
Well, I have been following this for weeks. And, of course, the problem with declaring victory on this too soon is that we're still technically in hurricane season, and it only takes one really bad hurricane, right, to change the narrative completely. So we really have to wait until the first week in October to declare victory that this was a colossally, catastrophically wrong prediction. But here's the thing. By the time we get to that point and we're safe in declaring victory, no one will care anymore
because we'll
be off to something else.
It is ridiculous. And I know I've kind of been waiting to spike the ball too much, but it looks like we're pretty safe right now. All right, Zig, thanks for coming on. I think you need a nap or something. We're going to hope that you feel better. Do you have a cold? You do seem a little resonated.
Yeah, I do have a cold. Okay. I do have a cold, but that had nothing to do with my opinion on which we disagreed.
All right, we'll see you. Take care.
Take care.
It's always a spirited conversation with Zig, which is what I love. On the topic of the media, let me get this in here from Marco Rubio from the weekend on Face the Nation, because, oh my God, this whole thing with eating cats and dogs is still out there, right? And the media wants to mock Trump and J.D. Vance, and I'm at the point where I wish he would have never said it. But this issue in Springfield is legit. And Rubio was being asked about this with Margaret Brennan yesterday. So she asked this question on Face the Nation, tries to get an answer here. I got to make sure I have the right thing up those here. Sue, I'm confused on where I'm supposed to be playing things.
Oh, you
because
can do
I've
it.
Messed it up. Let's see if this works.
It's important that we hold ourselves accountable for the failures of July.
That's Ronald Rowe. He is the FBI director or the Secret Service director. Ladies and gentlemen, just be patient with the host because he's learning all kinds of new equipment here. Here's Marco Rubio.
The governor of Ohio has said he's a big supporter of the ticket, but he's sad about this because there's no evidence of these claims. He's disparaging migrants who are legal, and the verbal attacks dilute and cloud what should be a winning argument for Republicans about the border. Do you agree that this kind of thing is a distraction from the broader point and dangerous?
I love the intensity that Margaret is bringing to the question, and she won't do that, or they won't do that with Democrats.
Nope.
Maybe that's a legitimate question. I love that she's bringing the fire there. But she also says they are. Did you notice how she said they are legal? They are legal.
Yeah.
They're only legal because they gave them the status of applying for.
Yeah, to back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So repair what was already illegal.
So they're not. They came to the country illegally. Same thing with this guy that unfortunately killed this officer here in St. Louis yesterday. They came illegally. They're granted a temporary status because of the paperwork and the bureaucracy. But they're not folks who came here legally.
No.
They broke the law. Right. That's how it went down.
Allowing but you know, you're in leadership. So you know.
Well, here's the answer.
What shouldn't be a distraction? Because at a minimum, it shouldn't keep us from, for example, saying, okay, well, maybe I don't believe the dogs and the cats thing, but there are literally people moving in by the thousands in the case of Springfield. Charleroi in Pennsylvania, you know, that's a 4,000-person city that has 2,500 migrants. And I think one of the problems here is that somehow Americans who are not intolerant, they're not bigots, they're not, but they are troubled by the fact that their city is being flooded. In Springfield, you see reports, these are legitimate reports, of huge increases in traffic accidents leading to slower police response time, overcrowded schools. I mean, the strain this puts on a community, and if you complain about it, somehow you're a bigot, you're a racist, you're a hater.
No,
that is the story here, that everyday Americans are being made to feel like they're haters because they're complaining about something any of us would complain. If any of us, I don't care who we are, live in a city of 4,000 people, and you bring in 2,500 migrants overnight into one place, there are going to be problems. And
there
people
are absolutely
going to complain
problems.
That doesn't make you a bigot.
By the way, 25,000. We're not 2,500. 25,000. So
ridiculous.
Margaret Brennan's trying to get something in here. She wants to say something.
But you know, you're in leadership. So you know words matter.
Yeah, and I think one of the words that should matter the most is there is a real migratory crisis. There is a real migratory crisis. And even in this particular case, not just Springfield, Charleroi, other places like that, there are real impacts happening in our country with this movement of mass migration, and that's not gotten the coverage that it deserves. And you say you've covered it, but it hasn't gotten the coverage. The cats and dogs thing has gotten way more coverage than the real world impacts that this is having. And I think that's what needs to change in the way this issue is covered.
Yeah, he nailed it there at the end. Let's face it. We are now about 2 weeks out from that debate, right? It was 2 weeks ago Wednesday, or maybe it was Tuesday, 2 weeks ago tomorrow. And we're still talking about eating cats and dogs. When you have an ample amount of 911 calls and police reports that have indicated that, okay, maybe it's not cats and dogs, but they're stealing geese from the city park. The bottom line is that they are overrun with these migrants.
Yes.
And sure, we can all agree, as the city manager of this community told David Muir at ABC, they're people that want a better life. We all understand that, right? But there is a process. And why is it that, and this is where Margaret Brennan and much of the mainstream media goes off the rails, let me tie it back to one more thing. Let me tie it back to Tim Russert. Because if we had journalists that were not elites in this country, that could relate with everyday people in Springfield, Ohio, or in St. Louis, Missouri, or in Norman, Oklahoma, I think we'd be better off. But they act like, from the word go, from the word cats and dogs, there was never, ever an effort outside of some people online and pundits and bloggers to actually figure out what really is happening in Springfield, Ohio. J.D. Vance tried to talk about it, but everyone wanted to go back to cats and dogs. Rubio wants to talk about it, but Margaret Brennan, on one of the talking head shows from the weekend, only wants to focus on cats and dogs, and she wants to shame Republicans and Marco Rubio for even mentioning that because they're being insensitive to the migrants. Well, how about being sensitive to the people who live in this community that have been overrun? How about being sensitive to the African Americans in the city of Chicago and elsewhere that have been overrun, that have their tax resources, their education resources being taken away from them from people who should not be in this country. Now, we can have empathy. We can understand why they would want to be here. This guy yesterday was a Honduran national. I've been to Honduras. Okay, it sucks for the people down there, right? I met families. I met kids. It was kind of amazing because these kids were, even though they didn't have anything, they were happier than the kids here in this country. And I understand completely. I've said this for 15 years because I think I went to Honduras 15 years ago, that I absolutely understand the need for a mother, for a father, for anyone to come to this country and live the American dream. But there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way. And the wrong way is absolutely the wrong way when American taxpayers are being treated like second-class citizens. That's not acceptable. And I still think that is a major underlying election current that is not completely being felt in the polls. And we'll see if that's right or not.
Get more at 971talk.com.